What's up, all you burners, stoners, and potters, and especially all you gardeners out there? This is Mr. Weedman and Big Girl with the Grow Hour. Big Girl, my brother, how the hell are you?
What's up? I'm good, man. I'm really good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because we're about to smoke some hash with your man night next to you, yeah. Mr. Wolfman Jack. Wolfman, how you doing, brother? Welcome back to the show.
Good. Thanks, Weedman. Good to see you guys, man. Good to be over here with Big Girl.
How was everybody's holidays?
Very wonderful. Wonderful.
I love it. I love it. Well, this is our Burpin' in the Bag episode, but we are doing something totally different than we normally do. We're doing a live hash press right now with Wolfman and Big Earl. Take a look at that beautiful looking machine back there, gentlemen. I'm looking forward to seeing what you pull out of that thing. And so let's talk about what a Burpin' in the Bag is. This is your second show that we get you to come back on, and Big Earl and I get really high and let you do all the talking. So what we get to do is we get to sit back, ask some cool questions, good conversation, but this is your show, and this is the show you wanted to do. You wanted to press some hash and show everybody out in the world what the Wolfman can do, so this is the show. So we're all going to get stoned real quick, though, and smoke some good hash. I'm smoking out of the Puffco Proxy, Puffco Proxy Pro, whatever the fuck this thing is, gadget's called. And what are you smoking out of, Big Earl?
I think that's called the Puffco Proxy, too. I don't know, the pipe version.
The pipe version.
Yeah, Santa Claus brought it for me.
Yep.
These things make it too easy, man. It's dangerous. Little fucking things. You just take them anywhere you want.
It's so nice. And this is a temple ball, right, that you gave me, Wolfman? Or Big Earl brought over for me that you made? So this is a temple ball that you sent over, and I cracked it open a little bit, so this is what it looks like. And this thing's pretty dope. The smell is just unbelievable. What strains did you use, if you can remember? I think you were telling me you did it with four different strains.
From Big Earl. We had Chem Cheese Haze. We had Peach Stank. Help me out here, Earl.
Sunkissed was in there. Man, there was one other one. There were some smaller. There were like four plants I kind of shoved onto a tray. but they looked super nice and fresh frozen right away.
Beautiful and frosty, and just washed them nicely. Had a good yield out of them. Pressed it all out. Made bubble hash, temple ball, hash rosin.
It was all delicious. I've been smoking.
I'm gonna turn the heat up on this on the next one I smoke. So, because I think it needs to go a little bit hotter. I had it at 490. I'm thinking this thing might need to be about 520 to melt that temple ball. I think I'm gonna go up to 520 on this one, on the next one for Mr. Weedman here. So when I'm ready to take another hit. But so yes, this Burpin' in the Bag episode is something special. It's the first time we've ever done something like this before. So I'm super stoked where people get to see a live press going on, live rosin being made, and we're going to show that at the end. But for right now, we're going to ask some questions and just some stuff maybe we didn't talk about in the last episode on how we did the whole hash episode in the last one. And that was a hell of a lot of fun. You were sitting looking sexy by the fireplace there, Wolfman. I loved every second of it. I was like, man, he looks sexy.
That's what I was going for, really.
So I'm going to let Big Earl take this over here. Next couple of things he's going to talk about. But before I do, I want to rip this one more time. Look at the change colors. This is a different color setting I have. That's the one thing I like about this thing. It has a bunch of different color settings. There we go. I lit that thing up at 520, so it should be better.
Yeah, we're going to go over – we're going to show pressing flower today, but we're going to go over some of the other stuff like Keef and Bubble Hash, which is pretty similar to what we were talking about earlier, he said. And but we don't know, so we're going to go over all that shit. So as far as prepping the flower, you know, we get our plant done. Let's say we hang it and we're going to do this, 2 weeks after it's, cut down, it's just got dried. How do we prep the flower now to really get it to where we put it into these bags?
So the thing I like to do is a very, very light trim. You're going to just remove any of the extra leaf matter that doesn't have trichomes on it, doesn't have crystals on it. You'll leave it very kind of a dirty trim. If you can see here on camera, I trimmed some of this personally right before the show here. a lot of the leaf matter is still left on there because all that is just covered in crystals. And we want that because there's essential oil in there that we can press out.
Yeah.
And make really be very careful to not touch the actual buds themselves. I'm holding the stems. I'm trimming very lightly with the scissors. I'm trying not to touch the actual flowers, trying not to damage the trichomes on the surface of that flower.
So you want people, when they're cutting their bud, to leave a little stem. If they're giving it to you to press for them, or even if you're pressing it at home, they should leave like a nice little stem on there so it can be held and not touched. Because like you said, you don't want to ruin those trichomes and all the good stuff because it ends up on your fingers, right?
A lot of people, when they dry, they'll either do a whole plant dry or they will cut the branches individually and leave them long and then hang up the branches on like a wire or something. That's really the best method because then you have that whole branch to hold. You could twist the branch, get around all sides, go up and down, and then cut the buds off individually and put them on a tray or something to get ready to either dry further or get ready to press them.
It's stuff like that, you know, because like I didn't know that before me and Wolfman had our discussion and we went over like, hey, here's how you grow for hash. That's what you don't see being done a lot. At least I don't. When you go to a lot of this stuff, it's like cut down, dry, do what you can to get the trikes off or whatever. Go through a trim machine, break everything off of this. And the more gentle you are, it's what it seems like or what it's proven, like everything's so fire, the more you get out of everything.
The most common misconception is people will always bring you their old material, stuff that's been sitting around, stuff they can't put in a bag and sell to somebody, and that they want you to make hash from it, and they're going to expect that that's going to come out like stuff you see on Instagram or something, and that's just not the case. You can't polish a turd. That doesn't mean it's bad material. It just means it's bad hash material, and that's fine line that you really have to teach people, because people want to make hash just from whatever the hell they got laying around, and it just doesn't work that way. A lot of times, it's just not worth it. You're going to be doing all this work, and you're going to get single-digit returns, and you're going to smoke a gram out of a pound or something, and that was not worth your time.
That's not a good yield at all when you got that going on.
It's going to be black and unstable.
Do you say that the trichomes, do you want them to be clear, cloudy, or amber?
So the trichomes, and I've talked a lot with Earl about this, you really have to watch that. It's very different in harvesting for hash compared to flower. Personally, for all the plants I grow at home, I harvest everything at 5% or less amber. And I'm not just looking at that. I'm looking at the pistil color. So your pistils will change from white to either like a orange or a red color, the hairs on the plant. I'm also looking at the size of the trichome. Are the heads swelled up? Is the stem of the trichome swelled up? Are all of the heads milky? Is there still a lot of clear heads? Are there broken heads? Is there too much amber present? All these things play a factor. And if you go over or under one of these, you're going to severely change your end result when making hash.
It's hard to grow for.
It is. So with the pistil color, though, what color do you want that to be then?
So that depends on strain, because some of them, and it's even harder for me because I'm actually colorblind, so it could look orange, it could look red, so I couldn't really tell you. The wife makes fun of me all the time. But
so does mine, because I'm semi-colorblind.
All right on, right on. So a lot of times most of your pistils are going to stay white the entire time of their growth until maturity, where they start to change colors. At that point, if they change colors before that, that's because they're probably pollinated and starting to produce seeds, which you're kind of screwed at that point. That's not what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
At the end of the flowering cycle, though, these pistils are going to start changing. And usually for my particular harvest for hash, I notice it's around 75 to 80% of the pistils have changed colors. So I still have some white on there, But when I throw a microscope on three different levels of the branch, I notice that the trichomes are developed how I want them. And if I grow this plant another week or two, that the essential oil in those trichomes is going to change, and I'm going to change my end product.
Interesting.
It's very touchy.
My background has always been for the flower, you know?
Yep.
And so when we go through it and it's like, well, doesn't matter really how the flower is growing or how your plant is like changing for the fall, or if it looks done this way or that way, you got to get a scope on it and you got to look at all this shit. Because it's big, you know, when you talk the difference between like 4% and 5%, you're talking a 20% difference. Like, it doesn't sound like a lot between 4% and 5%, but it's a 20% difference. So,
really,
you know, because I mean, 4% to 5%, that's one out of the five, that's 20%, you know, like it kind of compounds. That's what I found, at least, as the gardener, and as we've talked about, hey, how can we do this better? How can we get this better? Touch it less, get it frozen, don't freeze it, how to dry it, all that shit. And it just makes a big difference. It's a whole different mindset on there.
Is that your handy dandy microscope?
I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, yeah, we can see it. That is fucking awesome. So awesome to see that. I love it. Look at all those beautiful trichomes on that thing.
With this last table, so what I traditionally do is I only run one plant, one strain at a time in my room. So sometimes I'll have 20 or 30 strains. And they're all so, like, before I could be like, okay, I'm going to speed this up or try to take this down or try to do this or that to try to cut these all at 9.5 weeks because these are done and these aren't quite done or something. But now it's like, I can't really manipulate them. I have to be
you need a bigger room.
You need
another room just for your hash room, for your hash flower room. And that's,
I need to know my strains,
for that.
My hash right. strains, and be like, hey, these hash strains I'm going to take at this time. I know for sure, no matter what.
New project for Earl.
Build the warehouse, and then he can put a lab for me in the back.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
We'll just be running all kinds of good shit out of there. But okay, so the you got your plant down, it's dried. You prep the flower. You haven't touched it much. It's looking delicious. What about prepping the bag, and not only the flower, but like the bubble and the keef? You probably, because like this is two different processes. Maybe we should go through that too a little bit. We will. But the bubble and the flower you will press different, right? Or put in the bag different?
Yes, and they're going to use different bags also. So with flower, we'll always start with that. If it's freshly dried, which is like kind of what we're doing today, you can use anywhere from a 90 micron to a 160 micron when pressing that. Generally speaking, you could use your 160 for a very fresh flower. The drier it gets, the longer your flower sits, you want to go down in micron. That's where your 90 is going to come in handy. You're just basically stopping any of those extra contaminants from getting out into your end product, creating the purest end product that you possibly can. Bubble hash and keef, which are basically the same thing, just made with different processes. One is made through dry sifting. The other is made through ice water hash. Both are sifted through a fine filter micron screen, usually varying in micron, 4 or 5 different microns in total. Could be up anywhere up to 9 micron. The difference in pressing bubble is it's a much finer material, so you need to go down in micron significantly. Your bubble hash is formed into a block. It is wrapped in a 15 micron square, just like a sheet. You're wrapping it around. That goes inside of a 37 micron bag, which is folded, and then again in another 37 micron bag. And that is done just for basically filtration and to keep everything from exploding, having a blowout of your bags.
Blowouts suck.
Blowouts are horrible. They ruin your product.
Yeah, it ruins everything. I haven't done a lot of squishes personally, but I've had fucking blowouts. And it's been like, oh shit.
And we're gonna go over how to avoid that.
But
I'm pretty stoned.
Yeah,
that's good.
I'm pretty high. Thank you for that ball. It's fucking wonderful. But the worst part about it, I ripped this thing like 8 times. So because it wasn't hot enough. On the first 4 rips, it wasn't hot enough. I got some. I know I did because I was and then I ripped it 4 more times at 5:20, and now I'm fucking baked.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's where we're about to be.
So what kind of micron bag for which again? Like what size do you use for bubble? What size do you use for flower? Does Keef make a difference between what you use micron bag wise?
So for flower, we're going to use anywhere from a 90 to a 160 micron. For Keef and bubble hash, you're going to use from a 15 to a 37 micron. And you could even wrap, when you're doing your bubble hash, you could even take that 37 micron package and put it inside of a larger micron, like a 120 or something, just to help hold it all together even more, just to avoid that blowout.
Gotcha. Do you have one on you, like handy?
I sure do. I got a 14-gram Nug Smasher bag.
Cool, let's see it.
This is a 90 micron, so you can see through this.
Yeah, I see your pretty faces.
And they call this a 14 gram bag. Now Nug Smasher is really good because they have figured out all of the math for you. So if you buy their products and use their presses, you don't have to think about anything. You just do what they say, and you could press exactly the way I do your first try.
I love it. Awesome. You sold me, and you don't even work for the company. So, and they don't even sponsor the show, everybody. So just so you know, but he sold me. That's a good salesman right there. And for all you out there in the world, for all you out there in the world that press your hash, and all you hash makers that listen to the show, and all you work in the cultivation aspect of it all, this is Wolfman's way. May not be your way, but you could learn something. So I want to let everyone know that this is the way Wolfman does it. I know we'll probably get some DMs from people or YouTube people going, I don't know, I use this. Great. I'm glad you do. And if it works for you, amazing. This works for Wolfman and for Big Earl, and I'm smoking his shit right now, so it's fucking, I'm baked. So it's good stuff.
I've tried most of the products out there. I've been through this, been through that, and I always seem to go back to the same things. Just
the Nug Smasher. Is that what it's called? Nug Smasher?
Nug Smasher, yep.
That's like NUG Smasher? Like,
yep.
I like it. Fucking love it. That's a good fucking straight to the point name.
They don't mess around. They got a YouTube channel. Their freaking owner is on Instagram. He's awesome. I've talked to
him. Sweet. We should have him on the show. Do we another one. Yeah, cool. Yeah, that'd be great as fuck. So, prepping the squish area.
Ooh.
So how's that work?
Obviously, you want to make sure
wax on.
Wax on.
You wax on off. And wax off it.
So you want to make sure everything's clean. You don't want any contaminants in your area. You don't want anything in your way. We're kind of crowded here because this isn't my normal setup, but we're making it work, you know. You want to wipe everything down. I like to lay down either a piece of parchment or the parchment that I'm going to be using. I like to work on top of that because I know it's clean. You want to have good light. You want to have a flashlight, you want to have scissors. Just make sure your area is prepared for what you're about to do. You don't want to have to get up and have to grab something in the middle of a press or something, because then you're not able to focus on what you're doing.
Do you use anything to clean the area first before you, like when you're prepping it, do you use any kind of like wipes or bleach, or do anything to prep the area? Not only just making sure you have everything, cleaning the area first though. From the last prep, from the last squishy, or do you just wipe it down with just some hot water and some vinegar? I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I definitely use 70% ISO. So they make stronger ISO out there, but the problem with the stronger stuff is it evaporates too quickly to kill any actual germs or anything. So everyone recommends that you use 70%, and that's used in mycology also.
Yeah. To clean your room too. Yep. Never want to go higher than the 70.
Never go higher. Yep, your tents, all that stuff. So clean your tables, you can clean your press. Obviously not the touch screen, that would be bad. But wipe everything down, wipe your tools down, wipe your scissors down, even your gloves. You know, I like to reuse my gloves. I'll clean these as soon as I'm done. And
look at you.
Reuse them 10 times.
You're so healthy for the earth. I love it.
I try.
My biggest line is if you don't take care of Mother Earth, Mother Earth ain't gonna take care of us. So you're doing your part by not just wasting rubber gloves that don't compost at all. So so that's awesome to hear. I like it.
Have prepping. You ever had dirt, like done a squish and been like, fuck, I didn't prep my area right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I've done a press and then, you know, you pull it out of the machine and you open the paper up and look at it. Take your little puck out, which kind of looks a little something like this. And you notice that there's just all this contaminants in there. And you're like, looking at it, what the hell is all that? Could be dirt or pieces of weed, flower that got in there, or stems or something that maybe got stuck underneath you didn't see. Your table could have had something on it, and it got stuck in your press. And now your end product is contaminated. And you got to pick around that and probably lose some of your product, which sucks. Nobody wants to lose anything. We want to smoke more of it.
Yeah,
that's true.
What percent do we look at it here? Like, if we run a bubble, what percent do you think with that technique? And what like is an average type or something on the flower? You think
so? Percent yield, you're talking.
Yeah, percent yield. Yes, sorry, okay. 10 grams in. What do you get? Whatever the breakdown.
So your average bubble yield is going to be anywhere from 50 to 80%. And that's 50 to 80% of whatever bubble you're putting in. So let's say you're putting 100 grams in. You press that out, you're going to get 50 to 80 grams back of hash rosin, which is almost the most purest form of solventless extraction. For flour, that number is going to be a lot less just because it's flour. You know, bubble hash is already a concentrated form. It's already a type of hash, and we're purifying it even further. Flour is the raw form of bubble hash, so we're not going to get an equal or more yield out of pressing flour. It's obviously going to be lower. So your average yield for flour is going to be anywhere from 10 to 20%. Depending on the flower, depending on the strain, depending on how it was handled, harvested, dried, how long it was cured, if it was cured at all. I always say it's better to cure the hash than it is to cure the flower, because for one, it's a hell of a lot easier, takes up less space, and you can't really screw it up, because you could just put it in a jar, throw it in your fridge, and forget about it for 2 months and be like, oh shit, I got this bomb ass hash to smoke.
That makes a ton of sense.
You forget about your flower, you don't burp it or something, you could have mold, you could have just chlorophyll taste, it could taste like straw, you could mess up a lot of things.
Yeah. So we go through, we clean our weed up, we fucking press this shit, we get our percents that we get. What do we do then? Did you call it whipping, or do you do that with everything, or what about that step afterwards?
So there's a couple things you can do after the actual press. You can cold cure it, or you can do what's called a hot cure. Hot cure is exactly what it sounds like. You're putting it on a hot plate, and first you want to cause agitation. You want to whip it. You'll see online people will do the pull. They'll pull it like taffy, blah, blah, blah.
I like the taffy pulling. I love watching that. And then they braid it and pull. It was amazing the first time I saw that.
When you're only working with a little bit at a time.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a big operation, so it was really.
I was sitting here earlier with little chopsticks, just.
it looked like taffy pulling machine. It was amazing when they were doing it.
When we're doing smaller amounts, you know, I'll take my dab tool like this.
It's like a little skinny spoon.
You just kind of whip it, or even I'll just twist it on there, and just you're basically doing the same thing as pulling it and kneading the dough, you can say.
No, it's so pretty, though. I have a video of it when I saw it live, and it was absolutely the most amazing thing I ever saw.
That amount to play with. It's definitely
fun. Oh, so beautiful looking.
Did you say you store it in the fridge? Is that because it's dark? Is there, does the cold help it, or is there anywhere else you just say store it?
So there's three things that will degrade your hash over time, and that is light, temperature, and oxygen.
Those are the worst of all. Those are like the three things, the kiss of death for a lot of stuff. So I had a feeling you were going to say all three, yeah. But that's my one, two, and that's the kiss of death for a lot. Beer, weed, hash. Yeah.
Anything good, really. Mushrooms.
Yeah. People forget oxygen, as much as we need it to survive, it also degrades and like beats shit up.
It has a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah, I actually, when we talked in the last episode, when you talked about storing it, and I kept mine in the fridge, and I kept it in the little containers like I have, you know, little black containers, little glass containers. I got this little yellow one here. But you brought up something interesting on the storage last time, and that was you stored it in a mason jar in the paper, and you had it in the wax paper, right? Or was it the parchment paper?
Yes.
And you had it stored in a mason jar like that. Well, now, Earl, show them the other jar. That you have now that you could store these in, the black ones behind you. No, the black ones behind you. Yes, those jars. Now, no light gets in that jar. It's only the UV red, which is good for curing. Yep. So that's mirror and glass. But that, instead of using a clear mason jar where light can still penetrate, whether it's in your fridge or not, every time you open your fridge, the light goes on unless you don't have a bulb in there. Those jars will stop all light from going, all the bad rays going in, and keep only the good rays go in. So, it's smell proof and oxygen proof and all that stuff. It's pretty sweet jar. So that's what I was trying to talk to you about last time. And I just had to bring it up because Big Earl got a Christmas present for Mrs. Weedman. So the story is
where my dad should be right now.
So I've been keeping it in. I've been keeping it in those jars in the fridge. What's? I don't know if I heard this. What's the temperature of your fridge should be? Can having your fridge too cold fuck the hash up?
No, actually, nice. You can freeze your hash if you want to, and you could freeze your hash for a long time. The thing you have to be careful of is condensation. If you have a cold jar in your fridge, you bring it out. You want to take a dab. You open it up right away. The inside of that jar is going to condensate from the temperature difference of the air that enters into that jar. And it gets cooled by the air inside of that jar and condensates, creating water moisture that could get into your hash, which could cause mold over time. So it is a very good idea, if you want to take a dab out of that, take it out of the fridge, keep it in a dark place still, like a kitchen cabinet or something, and let it warm up to room temperature before you open it.
That's a good fucking tip. I didn't know that.
A lot of people don't do that. They pull it out of there, open it up, give it a whip, give it a smell, put it back in there. They're just fucking themselves.
So leave it out for a little bit, right? And then put it back in?
It doesn't take long, 5-10 minutes.
Sweet. So see, the one thing I like about the Burp in the Bag episodes, Big Girl, is that we learned so much on these Burp in the Bags.
Yeah,
so I've learned all the Burp in a Bag shows we've done. I've learned so much, and there's been so many good tips. So thanks, Wolfman.
Wolfman Jack, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Yes.
I tried to do the voice. I smoked too many cigarettes.
You should have the voice to do it. Because he was actually a weed smoker. And how I know this for sure. Okay, so how I know Wolfman Jack, and I know we're going off topic, but we got time. We're only 29 minutes into the show, so it's always so much fun when you're fucking stoned on hash and tell a little story here. So here's the thing. I used to go to this church here in Oak Lawn, Illinois. And I'm not going to – fuck it. First Church of God in Oak Lawn, Illinois on 111th Street. I'm going to give him a little plug. The pastor there, Pastor Dan, super phenomenal guitar – super good pastor too, but phenomenal guitar player. Like could probably play in any band. That's how good of a guitar player he is. I mean, his calling was God, but his calling was also being a fucking amazing guitar player. I think his son listens to the show, so which is kind of funny because he's a phenomenal drummer. But anyway, he fucking used to chauffeur when he was younger, before he was, I think, while he was going to college, and he got to pick up Wolfman Jack. He's telling this story at church. I don't partake at the church anymore, but he told this story that he got to pick up Wolfman Jack from the airport. And in the car driving to where he had to go drop him off because he was about to do a radio show. Oh, that's right. He worked for a radio. Okay. Pastor Dan worked for a radio. And he was taking him to the radio station so Wolfman Jack can get interviewed. And Wolfman Jack pulls out a fat fucking doink and starts smoking the doink in the car while Pastor Dan was driving him to the studio. And we kept on asking Pastor Dan if he wanted to smoke, and Pastor Dan didn't smoke, and he kept on saying no. And he smoked, and he's talking in the Wolfman Jack voice. Yeah, I'm smoking some joint here with Pastor Dan. You know what I'm saying? So I had to bring this story up because just to hear the voice, you're my Wolfman. You're my Wolfman Jack from here on out. So he's done and gone. So you could take over the name. Now we got to get you saying that when you're smoking hash. Yeah, there's a Wolfman Jack here. So I hope Pastor Dan doesn't get mad at me that I told the story, and everybody out there in the world, yes, I gave a plug on the church. I don't give a fuck. I dig Pastor Dan's one of the coolest motherfuckers in the world because he can jam on the guitar, and he got almost smoked weed with Wolfman Jack.
he probably did. He just left that part out.
To all his church members, yeah. That'd be dope though if he did tell everybody he did. I'd be happy. I would probably give him a standing ovation.
All natural.
So now going back into smoking hash, how can we like smoke all these different hashes, and like the hash that you made, the hash ball you made me, right? What's it called again?
Temple ball.
What strains did you use for that temple ball, if you can remember all of them? Because you said you had to use a bunch of different strains for this. So when we smoke these different hash temple balls, rosin, hash, how can we smoke all these hashies and like I'm smoking out of this. To me, it's a no-brainer. I don't have to think about it, you know. But how can we smoke all these different styles of hash?
Oh, there's many ways. You could roll it in a joint. A lot of people will take that temple ball, cut it into smaller pieces, and roll it into little worms and roll it into a joint.
That's my favorite way.
You could put a little bit into a bowl with some flour and smoke it like that. Possibilities are endless, really. Any way that you smoke.
Even the spliff, the almighty spliff, man. I used to smoke tobacco. Fuck. Bubble hash used to be the hash. I couldn't get any other hash. And so I'd roll some bubble hash, those snakes he was talking about, and tobacco, and I'd have spliffs. Yep. I'd smoke them at work because it would smell like tobacco. And yeah, there was that little bit of hash and weed in there, but the people that knew, knew. And the people that didn't know just thought it was a fucking spicy cigarette.
He's a Canadian.
That was my go-to forever. And then I stopped smoking tobacco. And I went to chewing. That's a different story. All terrible.
Yeah, all terrible.
But I had to stop with my spliffs. That was the hardest part of stopping tobacco for sure for me. But it was fantastic. Well, what about the temple ball? You dabbed the temple ball on your rig, and honestly, I didn't think that temple ball would dab on a rig like that.
It's not dabbing as well as I thought it would, but it's all it did smoke. It got me high as fuck, but it maybe, I don't know if I should use lesser heat, or do I need to make sure it's a little bit more warmer, room temperature warmer? I think I had it out for like a good 30 minutes so before we started the show to do that on purpose, but it didn't burn clean like the other hash rosin you gave me, which is a little bit, it's the temple ball was a little bit harder. Kind of reminded me a lot of Moroccan hash that you would get a little bit more like dry, not drier, but firmer, I guess you would call it, a little bit more like, I don't know. So, but well, maybe that's the reason why.
Huh? There's a reason for that. So your temple ball actually still contains a lot of plant matter, where the hash rosin, that even the crumbly stuff, is just the essential oil. Most of the plant matter has been completely removed from that type of extract. The temple ball is probably still a 50-50 mix or so of actual plant matter and actual essential oil from the plant. So that's why it's not going to be a complete burn, a full melt, because it's a full spectrum product. So it has it's going to have a little bit of this, a little bit of that in it, just to get all of the benefits. You could purify that and make it just straight THC, sure, but what's the fun in that? We like to smoke flower too, and why not smoke a hash that imitates flower but just intensifies it?
I can tell you this, full spectrum everything for me is so nice. Yeah. Even like a keef, putting that into like a lotion or food and using that over a isolation, like a distillate, THC isolate or whatever, or any of that, is so fucking, so much more therapeutic. It doesn't just get you in the mind, it gets you all in the body and everything. It's nice. It's what makes all the different strains something, you know, it's the shit.
It's really so what's the best way to smoke that type of ball? Because I'm getting little hits. I'm not getting big clouds off of it, but I'm getting rips. I'm just not getting like, you know, the big hits off of it. I don't know do I need to lower the heat down maybe? Do I need to raise the heat up?
I don't think that thing is the best thing to smoke a temple ball with. I think
cool, tell me how.
Yourself a fat old school beaker bong or something.
Oh, I got one of those. I could throw that in there right now and smoke it.
Sprinkle a little flour just to kind of plug the hole, throw some of that bubble in there, sprinkle a little flour on top and go to freaking town. That done. Should burn great.
We used Sweet. To do that with hookah. We weren't blessed enough to have a delicious temple ball, but we got our bubble hash and we throw it in with our hookah tobacco, and it would burn on just in that bowl like that with the coal. And man, we had a cop check it once. He's just like, "Oh, hookah." We were sitting there getting high as hell before. I was a long time ago.
But I have a nice little a Rick and Morty. It's not a bubbler, but it's like a cross between a bong and a bubbler. I forgot what they're called. And I have this thing, and I think it's going to be perfect to smoke that temple ball out of. I mean, like, it's going to be – I'll send you a picture later after the show. But I think throwing some weed on this thing and then throwing the temple ball in there, and then I think that thing is going to be – because you can, like – what's cool about this thing is it's a percolator. Time for the percolator. It's a percolator. It's a percolator. So I think because you can hold – you can take a hit. Hold it in there. The air doesn't come out. The smoke doesn't come out anywhere. You just keep on perking it up. And I think it'll get a really good heat going in there. And then like make that tempo ball burn clean with the flour. Yeah, we're going to have some experiments this weekend, fellas. It's going to be nice. Time for the percolator. Time for the percolator.
How did you that tempo ball? Ooh. Did you bubble hatch it and then like roll it out?
So there's two ways to make it. The standard way is first you make either bubble hash or dry sift, and then you will heat a glass bottle either with boiling hot water on the inside or just using a heat gun or something to a certain temperature, and you're going to smash your bubble hash all together into like a flat pancake in between two pieces of parchment paper. From there, you can take it, roll it all up in your hand, and you roll, and you roll, and you roll, and you roll until your hands are about to fall off. And then when you're finally done, you're going to do that again the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Now, mine stay very light-colored because I wear gloves when I do this. If you don't wear gloves when you do this, like traditional hash temple balls, it will turn black from the oils in your skin mixing with it. Mine don't do that because I wear gloves. Simple as that. It's more of a cleaner product. And
take a look, everybody. Even though it doesn't look like a ball anymore because I broke it up, but that's it right there.
It's really cool. Yeah. I have a little ball of that too, and it's like started to sweat over time.
Oh yeah.
It was like sitting in the jar and it started to get like, I see like almost grease running down the side of it now.
And that's the terpenes starting to separate. You know, you can cure hash just like you cure your weed. And over time, it's only going to get better. It's going to be a smoother smoke. It's going to stink more. The problem is most of us just can't wait that long. We smoke it.
That's true. shit.
Do you use air or do you like a pedal? I know pedal's traditional, but I've heard some people swear by using like air bubblers.
So a paddle is very traditional. A lot of people use garbage cans and just a stainless or a plastic paddle. Like do it by hand. It's a hell of a lot of work. Another common method is using a bubble machine, which is basically like a mini washing machine used for RVs and stuff. People put ice water in there, some bubble bags, you wash it up, and then you drain it through a set of bubble bags. The air agitation thing, I've never actually seen those. I would imagine it would work okay as long as your temperature is correct.
So what I was told, and maybe this is crazy, they said they put the air unit in a freezer, and they would pump air. They'd use a cooler, like a cooler you when you were in sixth grade soccer, and the whole team had ice water from the one jug, the igloo.
Yeah, yeah.
They put it in there, and then they drilled basically holes through the top, I think is what it was. And they checked. So he's like, oh, when it was explained to me, he said he was constantly pushing this cold air in. I never actually smoked any of this hash. I never saw it either. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that would make a difference or not.
I mean, that makes sense. It just seems like, to me, the thing that knocks the trichomes off of the material is the actual temperature of the water. It's not the agitation. It's not the amount of ice that's in the water. It's the temperature. Those trichomes are freezing, becoming brittle, and those mushroom head trichomes, the heads are actually breaking right off. And that's what we're collecting in our bags when we're filtering the water.
I learned something new again. I love it. So smooshing, as we call it, smooshing. I like smooshing next to Mrs. Weedman, especially. I mean, that's spooning. Sorry, smooshing. Smooshing fresh 2-week dried flower compared to frozen bubble. Like, what's the smooshing fresh?
So you can't smush any flower that's still wet. That's a common misconception. You have to first freeze it and then make bubble hash out of it. And then you're able to press fresh frozen flour, in a sense.
So like when we went over the hash stuff, it made more sense for what we do together as far as how I grow and how he processes or smushes to do the 2-week cure compared to the fresh frozen, because it's usually like one plant of something. It's not like 20 pounds of something. And so that's part of like the grower hash maker relationship, is like everything. It's just like in the garden, everything's so specific. How are you growing? What are you growing? How are you harvesting? What are you harvesting? How is it drying? How is it be like? It's a fun process for sure.
What you don't know always kills you.
Yeah.
Can we do anything with the smushed bags afterwards? Like, can we do anything with those things?
Definitely. A lot of people will do like an alcohol soak. So they'll use kosher ethanol, such as 151 Bacardi or Everclear or something. They'll soak all of their press bags, their used press bags. They'll soak all those at very cold temperatures in your freezer, mind you. Keep everything nice and cold. Soak that overnight. And then evaporate the alcohol. You could do that at room temp over about 4 weeks or so. Or you could add heat from a heat pad.
Hi, make an RSO?
And basically you're making RSO.
Hell yeah.
Or you just flip that bottle upside down into a watermelon and have a party.
There you go. Yeah. No, but that's pretty cool. That's good to know. Hell yeah.
Man, that way you're not having any waste either.
I was about to say, you don't waste nothing.
Or edibles or capsules or something.
If you put it, if you're going to turn it into RSO or something like that, you're going to burn the alcohol out of it, put it in capsules or make edibles with it all day long. That's why my brother, he used to make a root beer. He used to take that RSO and make a root beer with it.
That'd be awesome.
He used to mess some people up, though.
Here in Michigan, apple cider is really popular. So I would love to make an infused apple cider, just a hash-infused cider. I think that would be awesome.
That would be delicious.
If I had any spit in my mouth right now, my mouth would be watering.
I put I put hash in alcohol one time and did it that way, and I didn't burn off the alcohol, but I put it in Jello shots.
Ooh.
And people were getting so fucked up at the party, they were getting sick and stuff. I was like, okay, I can't do it. It was an Everclear, you know, in Jello shots. And, you know, it was like, you know, one batch wouldn't even get gelatized because there was so much alcohol in it. I was like, oh fuck, I gotta dilute these. I was like, well, 20. It was 15 years ago. That was a long time ago. We didn't know what was going on. Our hash sparkled then. Our hash was sparkly because we just ran it over a tube with a can of butane that froze our hands off.
Matt, you like it the good old way. You like your scissor hash or your finger hash, big girl.
I fucking love scissor hash. I put that on my joints, on my bowls, on everything I smoke pretty much.
Like Frank's Red Hot. He puts that shit on everything.
All right. So I'm super stoked because not only did we talk about hash again, we're going to do a live demo. It's live to us three, but you're going to be able to see this on YouTube. So if you're listening to this just audio on any platform out there, hop over to YouTube and watch the live demo. If you get commercials and stuff, it doesn't matter. You just go to the end. So we're starting this at 45 minutes and like 46 minutes. We're starting the live demo. So if you listen to this in audio, but you really want to see Wolfman Jack press with Big Girl and showing how it's all done, switch over to YouTube now at 46 at 11 seconds. And Wolfman, let's see how we do this live demo. Describe the machine. Show us how the bag is pressed. Show Dab and the bag after. And then because I'm sitting back and watching, I'm not asking any more questions. So I want to watch this. So here's Mr. Weedman sitting back.
Well, obviously, first, we're going to have some good flour to start with. This is our London pound cake grown by Big Earl. Some wonderful flowers. Very sticky, very resinous. We're going to use a 90 micron press bag. This is a 14 gram press bag. Same one where I was showing you earlier in our episode here. Now, there's a certain way to fold this bag. A lot of people will just pack it full and put it sideways, and you're losing a lot of yield that way. If you look on any of the websites for Nug Smasher or Low Temp, they recommend what's called bottle tech style. That's very easy to do. First of all, we're going to start by tucking in the corners. Just like this.
Interesting.
He makes it look easy too, guys, just so you know. I've tried to do this. It does not go that well. It's not that easy
when you start. I've done this a couple of times.
Two tree.
So, both sides.
Looks like a diaper.
Kind of looks like a diaper, or like even like an arrow even. And that way, when we push this down, it's going to flatten out and it's going to open it up. Just like a bottle. So now we're able to put our flowers in here. I've got my press already turned on. It's heating up. Today we're going to be pressing at 175 degrees Fahrenheit. A lot of stuff you'll see online, people will be pressing hotter. I like to press lower to preserve a lot of the terpenes and flavor. But pressing at a lower temperature, you have to increase time. So I'm going to be pressing for 160 seconds today.
Do you typically see a lower yield also with a lower temperature? And so is that probably why like a lot of the larger, more money, you know, hungry or whatever you want to call it, type of associations are not doing this?
So your temperature is going to vary greatly. There is a threshold of yield, a up and a down, basically. And you have to fine tune each and every strain. I like to start off at about 170 with about 600 material PSI. From there, you can amp it up just a little bit until you find where your yield peaks and then starts to drop off again. once you get to that peak, you learn that specific temperature, pressure, everything for that particular strain, for that particular harvest. Because it's that strain doesn't mean that it's going to press that way every time you grow it. Because it's going to grow different every time you grow it.
It really is. I know we said it before, but like a day or two can make a difference on what this end game looks like. Because we've had stuff, and like we've gone through it, and like this exact same strain, they don't have the right heads, or they're like a little older, or I managed them a little bit different, or they're in a different bag, and they're like it looks real delicious, but the heads aren't there, and the hash doesn't come out.
Yeah, but it's just fire flower, and anybody would be happy to just smoke too much of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So after we get our bag folded, we're gonna start loading it up. I like to start with the small nugs first. You know, just penny size or so. And I like to fill the bottom, get a nice base going. Make sure it's all packed in there really nice. Everything's nice and even, kind of eyeballing it. Doesn't have to be absolutely perfect because we're going to add to it.
Basically, after everybody puts in, he's pushing this thing down, if you're not on YouTube, and he's smashing it down with his own fingers to create this even surface and this even like layering up the bag.
But not too much. When I'm pushing down in there, I don't want to disturb the surface trichomes too much, because that's all stuff we want to extract.
Yeah, it's a real technique. My other press, I don't do anything masterfully with it, you know, not like this. But it was a lay down. I had like this little brick packer, and my bags laid down, and just the yield and even quality, I think, out of the wax I got out of that, it wasn't anything close to any of the bottle tech that he was talking about. On the same press, using the same bags. Just that process and getting that down and that technique is super huge.
And in that same sense of what he said, I wanted to just make a note to anybody listening. You don't need an expensive ass press to make the same stuff that I'm making here today. You just need a little bit of knowledge and the right press. There's good and bad in everything, and anybody will take your money trying to sell you something, but you get what you pay for, and you really need a press with a gauge on it, because that will provide you with consistency and something to monitor during your pressing. If you don't have a gauge, if you're just guessing, there's no way that you could be pressing out a half ounce, an ounce of material in four or five different presses. You're going to have four or five different results. If you have a gauge on there, you know exactly what PSI you went to every time, what size bag you're using every time. You can absolutely repeat your results every single time. You don't need to spend $18,000 on some crazy ass press. You can buy one that's $800, $900 and be a professional your first or second press, especially with me helping you.
That is a pretty machine you have there, though.
This is like the GOAT of home presses right here. And my wife says, this is why I don't have one of you guys' fancy smoking devices, because I got this instead. And this is my Christmas present, birthday present for the next, like, 10 years.
at least you got the bottle technique down pretty good. So even if you don't get the little gadget that I have, that gadget that's next to you is a lot better, because you can press whatever you want and smoke it any which way.
That's true. I like to come home from work and just do like a little 3 to 5 gram press, and just to have fresh pressed rosin every single day. It's just absolutely amazing.
It's like eating steak every day, like a really good steak every day.
Steak that you grew in your backyard and you came home that day and butchered it. Yeah.
without the calories, may I add.
Yeah, true. True that. Yeah,
it's more like buffalo.
I'm looking forward to when you're done with this, because I want to go, when we're done with the show, not that I want it to end, but I want to now clean this out and then go smoke another rip, but I want to smoke it in my percolator and really get the full effect. Because like I said, even though I'm baked, I didn't get what this could really be. So I'm excited to clean this out and then go smoke some Rick and Morty percolator.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, it's so delicious. Like even just smelling it, it's got a lot of the train wreck in it. I think I could smell it in there.
Well, this was, I mean, it tasted really well. It just didn't, I didn't get the big cloud and you know, it didn't do this justice of what I know it can be. It's what I'm trying to say. Oh, look at that.
So now our bag is packed.
It's about halfway full.
We got our bottom. We want to make sure those folds that we tucked in are overlapping or at least point to point. Ours are overlapping, so that'll be very good. And basically when everything squishes, it's going to hold itself together that way. If they're not overlapping or if they're not close enough together, them sides will spread out and you'll definitely have a blowout. That'll be a bad day for you. So here we got all this extra material for the bag. We need to cut some of that off because we need to fold the top of this bag over. So up there, I'm going to cut about half of what's there off. This is very difficult to do too. I make it look very easy, but that takes a lot of practice. And it still doesn't really come out even. So, after we get it cut, trimmed, packed, we need to fold the top of this. And that's very simple to do.
There you go, right there. Keep it right there.
I start with the sewn edges, and it's like this no matter what brand bag you're using. Some of them only have one sewn side. Nug Smasher has two sewn sides. Fold those both over in the middle. Just like a present. Fold the other corners in. Boom. And boom.
Looks like a nice pretty little box there. Perfectly squared. Like a Rubik's Cube.
And when we put it in the press, we want to make sure that the sewn side is sticking towards the side. We want to be able to see this facing out. No stitching, no nothing. All nice and open. That way we get nice flow out of there. So from here, we like to do a pre-press. And I have a really, really expensive, fancy pre-press tool that I bought directly from Nug Smasher. It's certified and patent pending. It's right here.
How sticky does your hand get when you do that?
Once it's in the bag, it's not that bad because that'll stop any of the stickiness. But my finger, there's some scissor hash for a big girl there. Yeah. Pick a dad bought too. So now we're ready to press this. You want to make sure your press is warmed up. On this press, everything is all touch screen. So I select the bag size. I select the PSI that it's going to put on the material, not the gauge PSI, the actual material PSI, which is a math calculation based on bag size. It's all broken down on Nug Smasher website. I don't even have to get into it. I can just give people the link.
They need to pay you because you've given them so many plugs.
So. At least send me a freaking hat, you know, a cool Nug Smasher hat. That's all I want.
We'll need to we need to find out their handle so I can like send this to them. So they need to see.
I actually talked to the CEO quite a bit. He's a really cool dude and he's really happy that I bought one of these presses. So he follows me on Instagram actually.
I need to send him the video and say, you need to fucking pay this guy.
I would not be against that.
You make a little bit of your money. Give you a rebate on this machine, this beautiful machine.
So parchment paper is a big thing in this. You want to make sure you use parchment paper and not wax paper. Wax paper is for making cookies, not for wax. Parchment paper is for making hash. which is what we want to do. This.
And there's a different thickness, right? We were talking like.
There is. A lot of people will just use the Reynolds parchment paper, which is perfectly fine. It is fairly thin, though, and a lot of times that stuff will rip if you're trying to press a large amount, like 10 grams, 14 grams at a time. There's a lot of other options. I prefer press club paper. It comes in pre-cut sheets. You can get them in any sizes, depending on the width of your press right here. You can measure it out. And depends on how much material I'm actually using. If I'm only doing a 5 gram press, I don't need a giant sheet of parchment because it's just not going to press out that much wax. This is a 10 gram press, so I want to use one of the larger sheets. The problem with these are, I got to cut this real quick because it doesn't really want to fit in there very well. So that's simple. You'll see a lot of people online that will fold the sides up. You really only need to do that for a bubble hash press because the quantity that's going to be pressed out, that's that 50 to 80% yield we were talking about. From here, we're able to press. We want to make sure that we can get our package inside of our press, which currently we can't. So there'll be a little noise right here. This is a hydraulic press, meaning there's no air pumps or no nothing. You push a button, everything's liquid hydraulics. It's an amazing piece of machinery. You're going to put your parchment in here. And again, you want to make sure that your seams are to the sides and not facing out. We're going to place our package in there. And we can go right in the middle. That's okay. Once we're ready, we check all of our settings. We're using 650 material PSI. It's a 14 gram bag we're using, and we're pressing for 160 seconds. We're going to hit start.
That was pretty quick.
You see, we're building up pressure now. It slowly does that so it doesn't cause a blowout of our bag. Once it gets up to pressure, it starts our timer. And it holds it there. At this point, we just get to sit back with this press. If you have a press with a pump, you have to sit here and make sure that you're holding that certain pressure the whole time. Not that big of a deal, but I'd rather sit here and smoke.
Yeah. Fantabulous.
Mine is like a gear one. I don't even know what you'd call mine, but you set the temperature and you set the time, but it like cranks down and it's like the size of a fucking coffee maker.
But you can press 3.5 grams at a time on his press. It has like a locking handle that locks down. There is no pressure adjustment, no nothing.
Exactly.
It works great as long as you know a few tricks. But if you're going to make the investment in buying a press and you're going to want to be pressing a lot and maybe even pressing for some friends, you need something with a pressure gauge.
I'm a set it and forget it kind of guy. I like the gizmo you got right next to you. One day, Earl, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. When I got mine, I loved it because it was every day I'd do a little press. I'd throw in, like you said, it was like 3.5 grams. And I'd get, tops, half a gram, usually 2-3 tenths. But for me, it was like, that's 2 or 3 dabs. And those would be my dabs for the day. But it was eating up an eighth of weed for 2 or 3 dabs. You know, you roll that eighth in some joints, that's 4 healthy little joints, you know, like. It was so eventually, especially when I started hunting through seeds and doing all that shit, I kind of went to straight flower. But with all this, it's like, man, it adds another element to everything.
Like I said, I'm a set and forget it kind of guy.
Yeah.
160 seconds. 160 seconds to have some fresh press. How long do you got to let it cure? I know we're going to talk about it, but
it depends on what type of cure you're doing. Here today for our show, we're going to be doing what's called a hot cure, and you could do that in anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes. We'll see how long it takes.
So does it cure it?
15 seconds left.
So after you take it out, what was that thing you just moved? Oh, that's a magnet to hold the paper.
Yep. Just so I can see, I like to watch it ooze out because it's fun to watch.
I love watching the ooze out. That's fucking amazing. So now it's releasing.
Now it releases, and you're done with your press.
Damn.
We're gonna collect it. A lot of times, people will throw this away, but I always recommend to any home grower to double press this. As soon as it comes out like this, set your parchment aside. Get another piece of parchment. Put it back in under the same conditions. You could even increase your temperature 5 degrees, increase your pressure by 50 PSI even, and press it again, just for a double press. Now, that second press, or your double press, that material is going to come out a lot darker. It could be kind of unstable at that point from too much heat, too much pressure. There's nothing you could really do about that. It's still going to be very, very good smoke and wonderful stuff to smoke. The last batch of bubble hash that I ran for Big Earl here, I actually kept all of the second press for my personal stuff and gave him all of the good-looking stuff just because that's how it goes. He should get the good stuff, you know?
I didn't know that. You can always keep – we can always split that.
Oh, no. I like to do this because I like to do this.
Oh, look at that. That's pretty.
And times looks, two, little mirror.
Looks goopity-goppity.
So we let this dry or cool for a minute here, and we'll be able to collect it. A lot of times you'll see on YouTube or on Instagram, people have these little fancy, cooling trays, and they're just stainless steel trays that you keep in the fridge. When you're ready to use them, you pull them out, and they're nice and cold. It helps you collect your rosin very easily. Well, an easy way to not spend $100 on one of those things is just to keep a space clear in your fridge, because you already have a glass shelf in there. Just take this, set it on that glass shelf, and it acts the same way as that fancy $100 steel tray that you don't need to buy. Collect your rosin up, and then you're able to either put it aside. At that point, you could put it aside for cold cure, which is the preferred method, I'd say, for most rosin. You basically collect it off your paper. You're not going to whip it. You're not going to agitate it or nothing yet. You're going to put it into a jar, and you're going to let it sit, usually about a week, and it'll change color. It'll change consistency. It'll lighten up severely. It'll butter up. At that point, after a week or two or three, you'll see people will whip it because the terpenes have started to separate. It's going to have a little oil on top of it. It looks like it's almost oozing or dripping. And you want to mix all those terpenes back in, keep it all very even, very beautiful looking. We're not going to do that today because that's going to take too long. Obviously, we can't do that on camera. So we're doing the other method, which is called hot cure. Basically, we're going to collect all of our rosin off of our paper here. Now that it's cool enough and we're able to do that.
He's got a tool and it's almost like a real long, tiny spoon. And yeah, he's going around just scraping it into a big pile. It's like a sticky-ass wax.
How good does it smell over there right now?
When he pulled it out fresh, it smelled like, you know... Not like cookies baking, you know, but you know that feeling you get when you smell cookies baking? That had that feeling to it.
Kind of like when I climbed a rope in gym class feeling. That kind of feeling?
Yeah, very, very nice. Very exciting. So, this part also, by the way, is not super easy. I've tried to do, I don't know what this is called, like whipping or something.
No, this is just a collection.
Okay, this is just a collection. Well, I've tried doing some of this post, what he's going to show you, And it's not super easy, especially in these little ass quantities. Like, I basically just ended up with half of it stuck to me, and then I was like, fuck it, I'm not going to ruin the other half. So,
he's... pretty looking.
Yeah.
Mm. Come on, I wish you didn't live so far away. I'd be, can I come over?
Anytime, brother.
All right, so now that we've got it collected, we want to get ready for our hot cure. Excuse the noise for a second. I just wanted to drop this plate down to give us a little more space in between there. So I'm going to cut a small, clean piece of parchment, not wax paper. Just a little square we could work with. I'm going to take our rosin.
And so this is called, we talked about it in the last episode, but just this is called cured rosin.
So this is just called flower rosin.
Flower rosin, okay, okay.
Now it's made from a cured flower.
Okay.
But it is, at this point, it is not cured at all because we have not, all we've done is collect it from
our front. Could you smoke that though?
Like, you can definitely smoke this right now as it is. We could take this and you could dab this all day long, full melt, be perfect in your little device there.
Mm-hmm.
Or for cold cure, at this point, this is when you would put it in a jar and you'd put it in your fridge, or you'd put it in a drawer at room temperature, which is what most cold cure is. It's at room temperature. I do mine, and I got a desk that's in my lab area, and I put it in a drawer in my desk, and it just, it cures perfectly every time in there. Room temperature, keeps the light out. I forget about it a lot of times. Now, oh shit, I got that jar of wax in there. I better go get it and smoke it too fast. So at this point, you could do that. You throw it in your jar a week at least, and usually you're ready to smoke it at that point because you're sick of looking at it. For our hot cure, it's a little bit different process. And you're going to take it from looking like this, which is very wet looking, very sappy, and it's going to end up looking a lot like this.
Oh, both look amazing.
And you notice the color is lighter. The texture consistency is different. And that's very easy to do. We're going to use the heat from our press. But first, we're going to turn our press off. Because we don't actually need it on anymore at this point. Our press is done. These plates are still nice and hot. You're going to take your extract, and this is the point where we're whipping. And I'm literally just, I've got my tool in there, and I'm literally just twisting it. And you can see this is very similar to pulling your hash.
There's your candy pull.
Looks like you're playing with taffy.
It's so much fun, but it's very hard to do properly. So you don't need to whip this very long. You just want to get it all agitated and a nice homogeneous mix. So you want it all the same color. Make sure you don't really have too many swirls in there. And I just kind of fold it on itself a few times. And that will usually do the trick. This is harder to do on the Reynolds parchment paper because this paper I'm using from Press Club is actually covered in silicone, which makes it a lot easier to work with. You can get this wax off of here very, very easily. After you whip this up, I like to spread it out because when you put it on the heat, it's going to flatten out anyways. This kind of just helps it along the way.
Do you ever just stop and dab the little bit that you have on the end of your tool?
Sometimes, but I usually will try and work it into whatever I'm working with. I've been doing this quite a long time, so it's pretty easy to get my tools pretty clean.
Yeah.
Without adding heat or using like alcohol or something.
That was definitely the hardest part for me. Yeah, it's clean. Was like I said, I was losing so much to mishandling it.
Oh, wow. Man, you agitated the heck out of that. That looks pretty.
So, and then at this point, we'll just throw it back on our press. We're just using the ambient heat left over from our plates here. And I like to use a mason jar lid to kind of circle, hold the paper down, keep it nice and flat on our heat source. That way I'm getting nice, even heat all the way around our extract here. And this is the part that we sit back and wait. You could take another dab if you have dabs. You could pack yourself a bowl, hit the bong. I'm more of a Cypress Hill generation, so I like to take me some bong rips if I'm smoking flower. You know, hits from the bong. Oh, yeah. We'd hang out weed, man. That's for sure.
So you don't press it. You just leave it on there, and it's hot enough. That one press on the bottom, it was hot enough to hot cure it, right? Like you said, for how long do you keep it there?
And you can do this with a normal heat pad too, at about 100 degrees, 110 degrees, 120 degrees. It doesn't really matter too much, somewhere around there. You don't want to go much hotter than like 160 though, which we're probably a little hot right now, but there's a little, it'll be fine. You're going to have
a little give.
We're going to have a little terpene loss doing a hot cure, but as long as you don't leave it on the heat for an excessive amount of time, you're not going to have much that you're going to notice.
What's the time on that?
It all depends on the wax that you're doing.
Gotcha.
And it depends on the amount. I've had hot cure stuff taken as long as 20 minutes. I've had other stuff done in less than 5. It really just depends on the stability of the wax.
Gotcha. So when you
when it's done with this heat, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, sweet man.
That's all right.
What when it looks like this, or were you earlier going cold, hot, or am I misremembering that?
So basically, after we collect it and I put it on here, you can literally watch it go from one end to the other on this and changing color and consistency. You could watch it happen. It's so cool. It's like a movie almost. And it goes from a nice, like, shiny, melted liquid to a, like, a candle wax consistency, making it super easy to smoke. You'd add it to anything. You could take dabs of it. You could cook with it. You can make capsules with it. Whatever the hell you want. It's totally useful for anything you need it for. Flower rosin, you're getting a lot of the essential cannabinoids. It's basically like smoking the flower. You know, a lot of people that smoke flower don't like hash because they don't feel that they get the benefits from the hash. And that's because they're not smoking the right kind of hash. You smoke flower rosin, you smoke good, well-made hash, you're going to get all those benefits because all of those cannabinoids and terpenes and THC and all those good things are going to be present in that hash. They're just going to be concentrated.
Yeah.
Smoke some of this from before?
Oh, yeah. Let's
try it out.
Well, while we're waiting on this to hot cure, we might as well smoke some that we did right before the show.
Yeah. How long did you say the hot cure takes?
Usually about 5 to 10 minutes is on your average. And here we're hot curing about a gram. I bet you that's probably 1.1 right there.
So I just took a little chunk of that off, super easy to work with, super easy to take off of there. That's the one that was whipped before the show cold and hot cured, yeah. Or just hot cured.
Yep. And this stuff, you know, it's not sticky at all. You touch this, you can handle this with your fingers all day long. It's not going to stick to you whatsoever, which is another nice thing. It's easy to work with.
How's it taste, big girl?
Oh, it's delicious. It when you smoke the flower, it definitely tastes like the flower tastes, but it has what this flower smells like also. It has more of the flower's smell in the taste, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's like much more pungent than the flower.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. This thing's cool. I might just have to get one and not tell the wife.
The small ones at night, not that bad. They're cool. And like I said, that one has the flower attachment to it, to that one too, which is...
I don't smoke a ton of hash. I was talking with Wolfman before the show, and I had a friend that would run a ton of like strains, and when he'd run a new strain of mine, he'd make hash out of it, and I'd grab a gram of that. But now, since we've been doing a lot of this, it's like, I was like, since I got this little guy, like the last 5-6 days, I've been smoking, I smoked more hash than I smoked probably the last like 5-6 years.
Yeah. Like I said, it made it a lot easier for me too when I switched over to the gadget instead of using the torch. As much as the torch is nice and people like it, you get big clouds. I burnt a lot compared to smoking. So I was like, all right, this sucks. You know, because I was wasting hash that I didn't want to waste. So when I got this thing, it turned my game because I didn't have to worry about it. But you're 100% correct on that ball. It will go better like in a bong or in a, you know, in my beaker or in my percolator versus this.
I was super excited for a second because I was like, man, I didn't know like this new toy I have can rip this other hash too. Like, yes. And so this waits for a second, and then do you take it off and whip it again, or is it just time? Did we already talk about that? Sorry.
It's just time. Only need to whip it once for this hot cure, right before you put it on there. If your extract is a little bit too hard or too... almost glass-like, like melted Jolly Rancher, you can put it on there and let it warm up a little bit and then take it off, whip it really quick, and then put it back on there and leave it. After your original whip and you set it on there, you're basically just waiting for it to turn to that butter consistency. And you could see it start to happening.
And you just turn it on for a second just to get the pad hot again for a second?
No, I was really just turning it on to see where the temperature was at. It looks like it was at about 160 right now. So we're looking pretty good.
Yeah, starting to bubble a little bit. You see little bubbles forming. And you can tell it's hardening up a little bit.
This particular press has two heating elements in each plate. So there's two in the top, two in the bottom. So I like to go from side to side because I figure that's probably how they're set up in there.
Do they have different levels, like different machines, like ones that might not be like affordable, I guess I could say?
Yeah, so the original one that I started with, which I recommend to like any and all home growers because it'll be the last one they ever need, is called the Nug Smasher XP. And it's a very, very simple press. It's got a gauge on it. You can press up to an ounce at a time. It's got a lifetime warranty. The freaking company Nug Smasher is absolutely amazing. Honestly, I wouldn't have upgraded because I could have went with a different brand for probably about $1,000 cheaper than what I got this for. But Nug Smasher has been such a great company to me. The customer service, the information on their website, just everything as a whole, I decided to stay loyal with them and just pay the extra money.
That's good. They you like them, so.
I recommend it to everybody.
Nice.
Lifetime warranty alone is nice.
The lifetime warranty. You don't
have to ever worry about it.
Yeah. They won't even argue with you. They have their own CNC shop. At the building, they make all of their own products in-house. It doesn't get more gangster than that.
So while we're waiting for this to finish up here in the next couple minutes, plug away. Tell us where we can find you at.
Oh, man, always find me on Instagram. That's about where the only place I am. I'm also on Big Earl's Discord. If you guys aren't on the Discord, you definitely need to check that out. Mm-hmm. He's got links to... so much good information. I'm I'm really getting on there to up my grow knowledge, because, you know, I'm a hash maker, not really a grower, but if I can grow more weed and have better quantity, then
yeah, fuck yeah,
definitely good. But check me out on Instagram at Wolfman, yeah. 001 for the
Wolfman. Yeah, you've been throwing out some fire pictures lately, so it's been great to see on there. So
I teach so many people on there all the time. It's really a beneficial resource to me. I'm teaching a guy right now how to do closed loop extraction, and he bought his first closed loop extractor and then contacted me afterwards. It's been kind of a nightmare because a lot of those systems are not built properly, so we've had to add to his system, and he was getting frustrated, but finally did his first run last weekend and was really excited about it.
Come on, nice.
It did not, because, you know, closed loop extraction for BHO in general is a very touchy thing. You know, solventless is very touchy, but BHO is even worse. And if you don't have that trichome development and that harvest time and proper handling for BHO especially, and then your process of actual blasting, which he kind of blasted on his own. He didn't really ask me for how I would do it.
Yeah.
You, there's so many factors that go into something like that. Like, that's some straight up Walter White shit. And for some average person to just go spend $1,000 on a closed loop extractor and think they're going to know what they're doing, that's just crazy to me. Yeah. But, you know, it turned out good. He got a decent yield from it. It's definitely still smokable as long as he processes it correctly. But it's not at all what he wanted to produce. Not what he was picturing he was going to produce.
Gotcha.
That's really hard to explain to people, that it's not necessarily the weed, it's how it was harvested, how it was this and that.
The motto I always hear hash makers say is fire in, fire out. It's like, if you're not starting with it, well, we've said this like 15 times, I think now.
Oh yeah.
But, if you're not starting with it, you're not getting it.
Yeah. And the problem, when you tell people you can do butane extraction, they want to bring you their stuff that's been sitting around that they can't do nothing else with. That stuff could be 6 months, a year old. You have no idea. And they want you to produce a high quality BHO. It's just not possible unless you're doing some very bad things to it.
how are we looking in that press?
Hey, you tell it's like hardening up a little bit.
Oh yeah, look at that. So some of it's still wet, but you guys can get the idea.
There it is.
Oh yeah, the
finished, almost finished. Man, that almost looks pretty. Finished.
You can that see some of it's still a little shiny there. I don't know if you see that on the camera.
I see it for sure. Yeah. But it still looks pretty. I have smell-o-vision, smoke-o-vision. Can you stick your hand through the fucking camera and I guess so? Soon, one day. But
so we pressed 10 grams of flour, right? And I guarantee you that's at least 1.1, 1.2 grams of rosin right there. Flour rosin. This was our 5 gram press. I would say that's probably pretty close to half. This one is
a little chunk
compared to that one, but minus a little chunk from us dabbing. That's consistency. The color's the same. The texture's the same. The yield is the same. That's consistency. That can only be done with a gauge.
Man. Holy shit, boys. I fucking learned a lot today.
Me too.
Another great Burping in the Bag episode. Yeah. Wolfman, before we head out, you got anything else you want to tell everybody?
You know, really, when you have to go and clean your machine, especially something that is this expensive, you first have to just douse the whole thing in freaking CalMag before you even start wiping anything off. Honestly. That's the only thing that's going to get it clean. Sure. That is the only thing. And that's a trick of the trade that you will not see anywhere else. And I'm probably going to get hate mail for telling you that secret, but it's a well-known fact in the industry.
It's true. When they say more cow mag, it's always about the cow mag, guys.
Oh, shit. I love you both, man. I appreciate you being on the show, everybody. Don't forget the cow mag. Peace! Check out our cannabis lifestyle brand online at 8decades.com. Our custom smokes and accessories are perfect for your coffee table, bedroom nightstand, or kitchen counter. They're designed for you to show them off. The Canna community is also loving our hemp and cotton blend t-shirts, sweatshirts, scarves, and hats, finished off with our 8 Decades logo. We've got some awesome, long-lasting goods that will be your favorite for years to come. 8 Decades, because a ninth decade of cannabis prohibition isn't acceptable.